Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Ahead of Alumni Weekend here, Alumni Day on Saturday. Obviously, the Mets also fighting for their playoff lives here down the stretch. Been struggling. Before we get back to the calls here, or Todd or Rob's, whichever happens first, I wanted to bring up something I just saw on social media. Did not think we were going to be talking basketball today. But I just saw a rule change that I'd be curious to get your thoughts on.
Okay.
NBA rule change. I'm seeing this on Courtside Buzz on social media.
That's ironic because I just saw something about the NBA as well during this. And you and I were talking most of the break.
And but not about the rule change?
No, about the Knicks. Nothing big, and I'm not trying to derail. I want to hear what you have to say for sure. But the Knicks brought in a guy with Coach Lang. He's been at St. Joe's, coach for about 7 years or so. I find that very interesting on the new staff. By the way, we both saw something about basketball during the break.
Yeah, weird how that staff has come together. But anyway, looking forward to the Knicks season, actually, when it does get underway here next month. It's going to be crazy next month, assuming that both teams make the playoffs. All right, so the NBA rule change. Unsuccessful end-of-period heaves will now be recorded as a missed field goal for the team, not the player, and players' percentages will not be impacted.
I like it. Honestly, I like it. I like it because I could already see you don't. I'll tell you why I like it. Common sense. There was a lot of times where you see guys, because it's always fun flinging that thing 70 feet in the air.
Right.
But it's not fun when you miss it, which you almost always will, and it goes against your three-point accuracy or your overall field goal percentage. So what you've seen, I'd say really it's become a bit of an epidemic the last 7 to 10 years. Guys will actually hold and wait till the red light goes on, and then they'll fire it. So it makes it look like, oh, I tried, but it's after the shot, doesn't count, doesn't go against my record. I actually like it. So you'll probably see a few more made because now everybody will shoot it. I got no problem with it.
See, Breen talks about this all the time, and I love it. He brings it up on the broadcast, acknowledging that guys are afraid to shoot. My issue is, who gives a, and I really want to curse, but I can't because this is radio, not a podcast. Who cares about the percentage? Like, what? How soft have we become that you're worried about a measly one miss from three-point range where we all watch? That's why it's not about the stats. It's not about the stats. It's about watching the game. If I see John Starks heave a full-court shot at the end of a half, I'm not going to say, whoa, he missed a three. I watched it. I saw what happened. Players are so soft and so worried about the stats, and everybody else is so worried about the analytics, that it's gotten to a point where they're going to change the rule and say, even though you shot that ball, and it is technically a three-pointer, it's not going to be held against you, to encourage them to shoot because the players are worried about missing and having their percentage hurt. Holy crap. I couldn't give a crap less about their shooting percentages. I want to watch the games. Now we're making rules around this?
Well, that's an Adam Silver thing who has just played to these, you know, tries to placate players. He's not David Stern. Let me just leave it at that. I wish he was. But no, I'm trying to separate the selfishness, which I clearly understand, and guys not wanting to impugn their own stats, if you will, versus what can I gain from
it? Like, it's good for the game that this is going to play
now. Now you're going to see a half-court heave all the time. Now, what was it, within a second? What was the exact timing mechanism of it? Did they have it specific?
He said at the end of the...
At the end. I mean, that's pretty vague. I mean, is it inside of a second?
End of period heaves will now be recorded as missed field goal. Yeah, so...
What does that mean? Is that beyond 50 feet, beyond 70, within 2 seconds, within 1 second? What does that actually mean?
Good luck deciphering where guys now pull up at midcourt with regularity trying to knock down a three.
Guys like Damian Lillard when he's healthy.
You know what it's going to be the heave as opposed to a
No, I know. I would definitely. But I mean, then why don't they... If they're going to change the rule, then just tell us... This is exactly what the rule change is. Beyond 70 feet or beyond 60 feet, within 1 second, within 1.5.
Right, beyond midcourt.
Beyond mid. I guess it doesn't really matter. But again, big picture, we'll win because we'll see more shots. And you have more shots, you have a couple of more circus makes.
Yeah, I just hate the idea of it. I mean, these players are getting soft nowadays. Not like they used to be back in the day where real men played the games. Like our next guest, Todd Zeal, who joins us in studio. Todd, how are you? Good to see you. Thanks for making the trek downtown here. We appreciate having you in studio.
Wow, walk in and jump right on, man. Yeah. Nice intro. Thank you. Good to see you guys.
Todd, how you doing? He's a veteran, Todd. This is a guy, you're right, when they used to be real ball players. Said he would be here at 12:30. It's 12:31. He's got the headsets on already.
One thing I
love
know.
It.
Good.
You know, I was just going to say, you know, I have to flash the new ID downstairs and get in. Very high tech here. Got to make my way up, but great to see you guys in person.
One thing I've learned about Todd, he doesn't waste any time. That's a Well, Todd needs to be on set by, you know, by 5:59. He'll be on set by 5:59.
Yeah, my nickname for about 20 years in professional baseball was Justin Time. That's what I used as my name on the road as well. So, I didn't waste any time, bantering about early in the clubhouse.
All right, so obviously Todd, currently SNY pre- and post-game, does a great job there. Former Met. You do a lot of stuff for 9/11, which is tomorrow. You'll be doing that tomorrow as well. And we had you on, of course, ahead of the Alumni Day, which is Saturday. You playing in that game?
Oh, yeah, I'm playing in that game. It's going to be... look, I we talked about this. I turned 60 yesterday, and... when you look at the two rosters, you know, it's Shea versus Citi Field. There's a bit of an unfair advantage to the guys that are 15 years younger than us, and some of them just out of the game or still trying to play. So it should be an interesting one.
No, what about the guys who played at both?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of those guys that crossed over, like Reyes. Is on our side.
Oh, nice.
So they split them up so that we have a couple of the young bucks, but Reyes on our side.
Your roster's loaded, though. Roster.
Give me some names here.
Their roster's pretty loaded. You have the roster.
No, Robbie, can you pull it up?
I mean, unfortunately, the two key guys on the Citi Field side, David Wright and Daniel Murphy, both had previous engagements, weren't going to be able to be here. But I think the Dark Knight's going to take the mound. And I saw R.A. Dickey, which is just what I needed to see is some knuckleballs right now. Trying to stand in the box. And look, from our side, we've got... Al Leiter and I think John Neese and Johnny Franco, but Johnny's got a bum shoulder, so I don't think he's going to be towing the rubber at all. And I'm hoping they let me catch just to get the gear on, and that's the safest place in the field with all that gear on behind the plate.
And that's true. Any unless you run to back up the throw to first base, then you might do something to kill these guys. Any odds on FanDuel? No offense, I'm going with the other team.
Good question.
John Franco can't even throw. He might pitch. Give me the other team, dude.
I don't know. It's a good question. I think. You know, we hope that kind of like when position players come into pitch and they throw at 58 miles an hour and guys pop it up. That's what we're hoping out of our starting crew. And Piazza's going to catch an inning. Paula Duca is back in the house, and Edgardo Alfonso and Reyes. And Carlos Delgado is going to play first base for our Shade side. So
you look at the Citi Field.
Okay.
I'm not going to disparage anybody. Look at the Citi Field side compared to Shea side. I'll ride with Shea, even though. Like, you're 60. You don't even feel...
He's 60 years old. He's 60.
Looks like he's 40.
He looks great, but he's still 60.
That'll all be exposed tomorrow. Or Saturday, I should say. Yeah.
Speaking about being exposed here, what do you believe about this Mets team? Everybody's in panic mode. I am not, for the record. I still believe they're going to be all right. What are you seeing with
this?
We
had a conversation about this, you and I did, in the studio. And look, I'm not in panic mode, but I do think sometimes teams like this, they got out to such a big... early lead and played so well April, May, but it was an interesting type of well, right? It was great pitching, like, you know, best in all of baseball, starting and relieving, and not great offense, but still won a lot of games, built up a nice pad. And they've been, you know, the third or fourth, you know, worst team in baseball, you know, since June. So that's a tough thing to overcome, but they are a talented group. I think Carlos, you know, says the right things, and I think he's got to be a little frustrated, you know, day-to-day seeing the inconsistent play, but their backs are against the wall now. San Francisco's coming. San Francisco feels like they feel like they have a chance. I mean, the two games is really three because they have the season series against them, but I think this next couple of days is going to have a big impact because right now it was feeling like, oh, you know what, even though we're not going to win the division or we may not win the division, we're going to still make the playoffs. That's a given. Well, it's not a given anymore, and so I think the backs are against the wall.
I think that's a good read. It shifted, obviously. Not that.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Can't change with a nice win tonight, or you know, you get that fourth game against the Phillies. And I don't know if you have enough perspective from both sides, and you'll see what I mean in a minute, to give us a personal answer, but I'm curious where you go. Is the energy stronger within a team now, negative energy, that's fading, or with a team like the Giants that's surging? Which seems to have more push, either in the right or the wrong direction?
I mean, I would say that they are kind of a counterbalance. I think when the team's just floating, the energy and the sense of urgency is less. When a team's surging and driving up, then the energy's high. I would say San Francisco's got energy right now. They've got a lot of energy. They've got a lot of want. They've got a lot of belief because they've been really hot for a long time, and they climbed from not being really in contention at all to now being the leading contender to jump to the Mets. And you saw it the first thing last night. Willie Adames hits a 3-run homer, and it was like a playoff win, like a walk-off in the first inning. So you feel the energy from that Giants team right now. The Mets, I think, have been a little bit more steady, not complacent isn't the right word, but I don't think they've felt like their backs against the wall until now. I do feel like that energy may have to get galvanized for them to drive past this. And the thing that I keep saying, and I think one of the things that, you know, we both have talked about, Sal, is that they have their own destiny in front of them. They have, you know, they're still the 2-game lead. Their schedule is not overwhelming. They, you know, Giants play the Dodgers 7 times, and the Mets have the season series record against the Giants. So it's in their own hands. It's up to them. They've got nobody else to look at. They've got no scoreboards to really watch. It's time for them to concentrate on what they do on the field, and they can control their own destiny.
One thing that is not up for debate, and we're in studio, Todd Zeal of SNY joining us in studio, of course, former Met and Yankee, but we'll gloss over that. One thing that's not up for debate, Todd, is that it has been a disappointing regular season. The division is now basically over, 9 games back with 17 to go. And, you know, the win total is not going to be what it was a year ago, even with more talent, at least in my mind. You think this team is better than they were a year ago? And if not, then why the inconsistencies, why the disappointment from this team really all regular season long?
I wish I had the answer to that. I think if I did, I'd be, you know, applying for special assistant over there and try to figure out a way to get that translated. But it's been a weird trend in all of baseball this year. If you look around baseball, there's been so many ebbs and flows with really good teams and poor teams as well. But I've never seen so many like great streaks where they look like the best team in the world, and then poor streaks where they look like they can't beat the cellar dwellers. And, you know, so you start to wonder, where is the cream settling? You know, is everybody going to end up where they're supposed to be? Because whether it be Milwaukee or the Cubs or the Dodgers or the Mets or the Phillies, there's been 7-plus game win streaks and 6 or 7 game losing streaks and 13 out of 16 losses, things that I've never really seen in baseball before. So this inconsistency is something that's more prevalent this year, and I don't really know how exactly to explain it.
Is there something strategic that you think Mendoza can do differently, whether it's a lineup thing, whether it's, I don't know, being more aggressive, even though they do steal bases, just something to try to force the issue to get them out of this?
I think what is in his control and command right now is the pitching staff more so than anything else. I think he's pleased to have the 3 young kids up there. I think that brings some energy.
They saved the season, Todd.
They've all pitched well, even though they didn't get losses over this last weekend. They all have pitched well and shown that I think that they're real. This is not a fluke where you bring up a prospect from AAA and he has one good outing and you're not going to hear from him again. Yep. I don't think that's the case with any of these 3. So I think that's a benefit. That gives him more weapons in the bullpen because the bullpen has been absolutely taxed. Helsley was a big piece that came over in the trade deadline and hasn't been able to be that 8th inning guy. He can never get to Edwin because they're giving it up in the middle innings. So I think his focus is there. The offense, as we've talked about, they were historically good in August, and the team went 11-17. I mean, they were the best they've ever been in that month, and the team was 6 games under 500. So that tells you that, you know, it's been an inconsistent run with the pitching not being able to get the job done when the offense has been, you know, firing.
We talked a lot about Manaea to start the show. What would you do here? For me, weeks ago, I would have moved him to the bullpen, have him be a weapon out of the pen because he showed dominance. I think you and I did talk about this in the newsroom as well. Last night, I was actually encouraged by it. Now, obviously, it wasn't a good start, But it was one of the best he's had, if not the best, and encouraging that he closed it out with three scoreless innings to finish five. What would you do with Manaea?
I had the exact same take last night. I thought early on he looked a little dejected, and he looked like, you know, there's this this thing in sports where if you go out trying not to fail, you're going to fail. If you go out thinking, God, I don't want to let the team down, you're going to let the team down. And there is this moment where you're like, screw it, which is exactly what Manaea said. He said to himself after the conversation with Mendy underneath, after the bad second inning, it's kind of like, screw it, I'm just going to let it fly and let it happen and stop trying to do some things. And all of a sudden, you saw him free and easy. You saw some swings and misses. You saw him, you know, feel like he was more convicted with his choices. And he had three great innings to finish his day, which I was most encouraged by. So, look, I think if you thought, I think they did the right thing with Senga, as hard as that was to do. I thought that Sean was a guy that could be a bullpen piece because he is capable of being dominant for three innings at a time. And so he could piggyback on one of the other starters, like a Clay Holmes, who they've had to limit his pitches, and he's been having a hard time going past five, but he's been good in those early innings. Those two guys combined, if they went with five plus, kind of, instead of a six-man rotation, I could see him fitting into a role like that.
See, I wouldn't do that, though, and I hear you. I don't think the body of work has been good enough where I'm going to roll the dice with 17 games to go. Because if that tunnel conversation does not lead to what you guys and maybe some others think that it could, well, then you could just flush another game away down the chute, because he didn't give the Mets a chance to win early last night. He did stabilize. I'll give him credit there for sure. But if there weren't other options, there's nothing to discuss. The three kids look better. I think that Peterson has been shaky, but obviously he's been a rock and an all-star this year and before this year. And I think Holmes in totality has been better than Manaea. His ERA is almost six. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm not moving mountains to do a six-man rotation or explain anything away. He is not, this is just my opinion, has not been good enough. I would not pitch him. I would go with five, and I would let Manaea come out of the pen.
Well, I mean, essentially, we're saying sort of a different version of the same thing. I'm saying if they decided to go to five and make Manaea a bullpen piece, I think that's an effective way to use him.
Okay.
If they are staying with six, then they're staying with six, and Manaea is that sixth guy, and you don't really have another choice in that matter.
But why would you stay with? But why stay with six if you're making room for somebody who hasn't been that good?
I think it's something that they're debating right now. I think they're making, and you heard Mendy last night, who has done a great job. He's very, very honest. That's one thing that I think is great about having him there, is he tells the truth. And last night when they said, "Is Manaea making his next start?" he said, "As of right now, yes." That doesn't mean absolutely yes, like he said about Sproat or he said about Jonah Tong, right? And so I think all of these options are on the table. They've got, you know, they've looking at what their off days look like, because you can give the guys that need the rest without having to have a full six man. So I do think that that's on the table. And I do think that Sean would be an effective guy if they decided to go five and have him be a bulk piece out of the bullpen.
How much of their struggles do you think just has to do with maybe a mentality? Like last year, we saw the chemistry take them to another level. It's hard for me to watch this team, who's arguably one of the most talented Mets teams that I've ever seen. Arguably, I'm not saying they are, but you look at Lindor, Soto, Alonso, and so on. And even when they do hit, they don't win. When they do pitch, they can't hit. Like, what? There's got to be some kind of reason for the inconsistencies. I know we're all struggling for answers here, but you're a player. You've been in these clubhouses before. I'm sure you've been on teams that have had some sort of similar issues. Is there anything that you could chalk it up to?
No, and it's a great question, because I think about it all the time. There was magic last year. There has not been magic in my mind this year. There's been some good stretches where they seem like they play as a team. Everybody's rooting for each other. It feels a little bit, I was going to say corporate, but it's not corporate. It seems a little bit more expected, I guess. And so last year was unexpected. So the magic was something that fans were able to gravitate to, and the team bought into, because, hey, there's something about being told that you can't do something, and then all of a sudden you're going to do it, and you're going to do it better than anybody else, and you're going to defy everybody. That's the way the team felt last year. This year, they were told that they better do it. They should do it. They've got the best team in the world. They spent the most money on the free agent market that has ever been seen before. So that expectation doesn't bring the same type of magic. I think they're going to have to find a way to rally for that a little bit right now, because I see some dejected faces when they're losing games that they feel like they should win.
Maybe they're just not having as much fun. Last year was kind of fun, and this year with the expectations, as you say, BT, with that crown, it's heavy, and it doesn't seem like they're having as much fun. We'll take a quick break. We're in studio with Todd Zeal of SNY, former Met, of course. Get into some of the stuff you'll be doing tomorrow with some Mets as well on the anniversary of 9/11.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Gio.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.